All right, ladies, buckle up.
It's showtime.
It's showtime.
It's showtime.
It's showtime.
Good morning, everyone. Welcome to the 54th episode of Matinee Talk. I am your co-host, Julian Owens, and with me, as always,
Johnny Lightfoot.
Johnny, how are we doing today, man?
I'm doing pretty well. I've been under the weather, but I did get tested for corona. No rona, so that's good.
It was just probably the allergies.
It's just the allergies just killing me, man.
Texas decides it wants to be hot one day, cold the next. My allergy says, okay, we're just going to change with it as well.
Yep, exactly.
So, yeah, with that being said, yes, it is full swing. We're close to Oscar season and the fall season, which we get some good movies to talk about. So we're going to have a double feature. I'll briefly discuss one movie, and then we're going to go into a very under-the-radar film that I think both you and I watched, and
yes,
we really enjoyed it. So we'll get into that in just a moment. By the way, you see the title of this episode. Yes, you'll be able to hear it in just a moment. But before we get to that, Johnny, we got maybe only a few movie news to talk about. So let's start with the box office. What happened with this week in the box office?
So, I mean, you could say what did happen or what didn't happen. So number one is Honest Thief, the Liam Neeson doing another Liam Neeson movie. Not that any of us are really surprised at this point, because I feel like these are all he does anymore, these paycheck movies.
These B-list action movies, because he can get money. Exactly.
Yeah, he's kind of entering that Sylvester Stallone, Bruce Willis of his career.
Yes.
To where he did Taken, and now that's
all he does. He's going to do. Yeah.
It's insane. But it brought in $3.7 million in its opening weekend. Number two, The War with Grandpa. Bringing in $2.5 million. Bringing its domestic total to $7.2 million. Number three, Tenet, bringing in $1.6 million. Bringing its domestic total to $50.6 million.
This is ridiculous. Like, absolutely ridiculous.
That is, without a doubt in my mind, probably what it would have made
at least
opening weekend. Number four, we've got a re-release, the first of two. We've got The Nightmare Before Christmas, bringing in $1.3 million. And then number five, Hocus Pocus, bringing in another $756,000,
which it's absolutely amazing to me about this top five. Like, this lets you know exactly where we are in terms of theater, releases. Like, just another one that, two of them that I just was surprised, two of them that are out of the top 10. Johnny, if you're ready. Uh-huh. Number 11 was Coco, bringing in $131,000.
Oh, wow.
And number 12 was Episode 5, Empire Strikes Back.
You know, what's crazy is I did see Alamo was screening that.
And
I was very tempted to go because I saw there was like a 2 p.m. screening and nobody was there.
Nobody was going.
I was like, I could just go see Empire on the big screen for, you know, basically it's like I'm renting out the whole theater, but I'm only paying $10.
$10 to go see it. Exactly. And so it's just interesting that now, I think from now until the foreseeable future, that's all we're going to get is re-releases. I don't think there's going to be any movie, like big tentpole film coming out for the rest of the fall, early of next year. And all we're going to see is like re-releases. And I would not be surprised, because that's 4 out of the 12 films are all Disney films, all re-release of Disney films. I would not be surprised if throughout the rest of the year, Disney goes by this train and just runs with it and just try to milk as much as they can out of it.
Yeah, exactly. I don't see much more coming beyond this.
So expect to see numbers like this for a while, guys. Yeah. Like, this is all we're going to be seeing for a while. But nonetheless, speaking of which, there's also something that's really cool that I didn't know that was going on. Basically, the virtual set that they're doing with Mandalorian, they're doing this for the Batman film set. Is that correct, Johnny?
Yes. So Industrial Light and Magic, Rob Bredau is basically offering an update and basically collabing with Warner Brothers for The Batman, which is currently filming in the UK, using virtual production techniques for select scenes. So basically, virtual production is using real-time visual effects during production. So if anybody's watched any of the behind-the-scenes stuff for Mandalorian, it's essentially like, okay, I'm in a prop piece cockpit, and then as opposed to just doing a full green screen behind me, I've got like a projector or some sort of something that's displaying space behind me. And it's, so that is, it's almost like augmented reality, reality while you're acting.
Yes, yeah. While you're acting and doing production.
And okay. I guess it gives it more realism than having that green screen. And it also gives the actor something more
to work with. Yeah. Okay, I like that. And it's going to be pretty interesting to see how they're going to do that with the Batman, though. Granted, there's only like, what, maybe 30% of the Batman filmed already?
Yeah.
So it's going to be interesting to see what they would use that for. I would wonder what.
Yeah, I mean, your guess is as good as mine, because I know they're trying to keep it as grounded as possible, so... I'm not sure.
Okay. All right. Well, is that really it that we all
that's,
got?
That's really the main, bit of news that I've got this week, because, yeah, I mean, we're still in a pandemic. And
I mean, if any of our, I was going to say the only thing else that I could think of, if any of our listeners care for rumors and gossip. Jacob Batalon, the guy who is playing as Ned for Spider-Man Homecoming and Spider-Man Far From Home, he recently posted a photo, I think on Monday or Tuesday or Sunday through Tuesday, one of those 2 days. And
this is the guy that was replaced, right?
Oh, no. This is Ned, like the heavier guy who was like Ned in a wheelchair.
Oh, okay. Gotcha.
He is thin. He has lost weight. Okay. So, not trying to like body shame him or anything like that, but he did come out on Instagram and said, hey, look, you guys can now stop telling me to start losing weight. So, you know, other people are giving him body positive vibes and stuff like that. But however, a lot of people are looking down the rabbit hole, and a lot of MCU conspiracy theorists out there, which I think was interesting enough because this is the only kind of news that we can speculate on. They think with this upcoming film, they're going to have Ned be the new Hobgoblin like he was in the comics and go that route, because now that, you know, Parker is now the enemy of society, I wouldn't be surprised if somebody does try to turn Ned against Peter and Ned becomes the new Hobgoblin. So that was literally just off the top of my head. I remember that was something that I was thinking about earlier today. So... What do you think about that, per se?
I mean, I'd be interested. I mean, I know Sony is trying their hardest to, you know, build their whole Spider universe.
Yes.
and everything, and you know, with that whole stuff with casting the new visual portrayal in the game to look more like Tom Holland,
yeah,
and all that. They're trying to create this greater universe, so it wouldn't surprise me.
But here's my thing, and I guess this is a little wander off on this one a little bit. I guess my issue will be is you already in rumors to talk with Jamie Foxx to bring back Electro. You're already in rumors to bring back Tobey Maguire and Andrew Garfield as respective Spider-Mans in the quote-unquote multiverse version of it. Mm-hmm. So it's like now you're adding Ned into the pit now for Hobgoblin, presumably. We don't know for sure, but presumably. What's going on? Like, I feel like this is another Sony issue that they're going to try to shoehorn too many things, and this could be a potential issue. Just saying it out there. I don't know. Spider-Man is starting to be in production, and it's going to be released December of 2021. So, I mean, could it be all of that? I don't know, but it kind of points all those directions, and it just seems like, I hate to say it, it's going to be a little messy if they're doing it the way I assume that they're doing.
There is one more bit of news. Okay. So China has overtaken North America as the biggest box office in 2020.
I assume that would happen. Okay.
So yeah, it climbed to $1.988 billion on Sunday. With surpassing $1.937 billion for North America. And yeah, basically, thanks to China's effective containment of COVID-19, the country's tens of thousands of theaters are operating at 75% of capacity, while filmgoers are demonstrating little hesitation about returning to the multiplex.
And while New York is just now trying to reopen their theaters, but having severe and heavy guidelines for people to go back to theaters in New York, and that's going to happen this upcoming weekend. We're going to keep harping on this since we came back. I don't like the way that we've been handling this for a while. I wish that it would get better instead of the way that it is now, but, you know, to times we're not. And until we get a containment and actually contain this and not have, like, what's been happening for the last 2 weeks, numbers continue to grow. People like China, people like South Korea are going to surpass us in numbers in terms of bringing people to the box office, because they're literally at the point now where they're dwindling their second wave. And it seems to me like we're still debating, not debating, we're still dealing with the first wave. Mm-hmm. So I don't know, man. I'm not surprised that China is now the leading box office in the world right now. It's just, it's interesting to see that we're still not going to push any movies out, but China's like reeling all their films out. It's pretty interesting.
Mm-hmm. All right. So with that, I guess, Julian, you're going to give us a little rundown on a Netflix Aaron Sorkin film.
Yes. So Aaron Sorkin came out with his second film on the 16th of October. Yes, 16th of October, called The Trial of the Chicago 7. It's written and directed by him. It follows the case of the Chicago 7, or formerly Chicago 8, until something does happen in the court hearings about the protesters that kind of shook the 1968 Democratic National Convention in Chicago of the year. That's literally all I'm have to say about that. If you haven't read about what happens in the Chicago 7 or what the incidents led up to that, I'll let you watch this film or let you read history on that. But dare I say, this is a really damn good movie. Like, really good. Aaron Sorkin, I haven't watched his directorial debut film, Gerald's Game, I think it's called. No, Molly's Game. It was Molly's Game. And
I like it. I like Molly's Game.
It's on my list. I still need to watch it. I know it's on Netflix or Amazon mm-hmm. Prime.
It's on Netflix. I really dig it. And like I said, I'm 30 minutes into Trial of the Chicago 7, and I'm really liking what I've seen so far.
The performances are absolutely amazing. Yahya Abdul-Mateen only is in it for maybe 40 minutes, and he plays Bobby Seale, the leader of the Black Panthers. Steals the show majority of the time. Sacha Baron Cohen, I will say that. Wow. Like, I still haven't seen Borat, but like, Sacha Baron Cohen was one of my highlights of this film. Eddie Redmayne, also highlight of this film. Like, everybody was on 10 in acting performances. The score was really good. The editing style and the way that Aaron tells stories through the editing process was so damn good. I really honestly enjoyed this film. I think I have it. I'm going to tell you guys now. I think I have it at number 5 of the year so far. Number 5 or number 3, one of the two. Nope, I have it at 3. So yes, like, best film of this year, and I think it'll keep rising up if I watch it again. But yeah, phenomenal performances, phenomenal writing. Was a really good film. I want to give it more spoilers than I can, but unfortunately, for people who haven't watched the movie and I want you to be able to see a little bit of it, yes. Highly recommend. If you have time, go watch that on Netflix.
Very awesome. Very awesome. Yeah, I'm definitely going to finish that tonight.
Perfect. All right, then. So with that being said, are we just going to go get into our
titular movie? We're going to get into our main review after a message from our sponsor.
And we're back. So, guys, you saw the title of this episode. Yes, you are right. We are going to be removing this movie called The Shithouse. It is not called The Shithouse on this episode, but you know that with the expletives, you knew it was like, wait, what? Yes, there's this movie that just came under the radar one of our frequent collaborators, Brett Leipziger, just showed us and recommended this movie to us this past weekend. And after watching it, we thought we had to talk about it. It was really good. I'm gonna let you explain the premise of the movie, and then after that, I would like your initial thoughts on it, because there's so many things I would love to say about it, but I would rather wait until you say what you want, Johnny.
So yeah, I mean, what caught my eye about this after Brett's recommendation was it did win the basically grand prize at
South By
South By this year. And it's basically about a college freshman who is kind of, you know, like a mama's boy, a homeboy. And he goes off to college, and his first semester of college is feeling really lonely, hasn't made any new friends, doesn't go out, doesn't do anything. And it's kind of that isolation that you get. And then it's like his whole experience is, with college changes based off of what happens to him one night when he meets a girl at a party.
Right.
And then basically the subsequent relationship, non-relationship from that encounter, along with him just changing his whole mindset and outlook on life and what college is supposed to be. And basically, it's really, really well done. And the fact that it takes place since, you know, so isolated, and I think that's part of the point, is because the character is isolated, Alex.
And I was gonna say, one of my favorite, that was one of my highlights that I put in my notes, was one of the highlights of this movie is, yes, it's in California, I think it's in Southern California, they said somewhere in LA, I don't remember, but even as being in a busy city, it feels so isolated, right? And for Cooper, I forgot his name in the movie. Alex. There we go. Alex. He, and I hate to say
it. And he's also the writer director.
He's also the writer and director, and it's his directorial debut. Yes. Cooper Ray, directorial debut. And I felt like Alex. Like, so I don't know how you felt about when you went to college your freshman year, but 8 years ago, I literally came to Austin by myself, 200 miles away from my home, and I just literally had to thug it out for a year, whole freshman year. And how Alex was navigating, dealing with emotions, dealing with trying to even talk to people. I was literally in his aspect, or literally in his shoes, because you're just like, okay, I want to talk to people, but I'm way too anxious to talk to people, really, because I feel like people are going to think I'm too weird or too nice. And then literally his sexual experiences later on, which we'll get into later, or just his relationships with people in general, or women in general, just was so awkward. But I don't know about you, but I had colleagues like that that really were kind of like that. And you just sit there and like watching in horror, like, wow, this is exactly how freshman year of college was. So it was a really good movie. It reminded me, as I was watching it the entire time, it reminded me of Boyhood.
So that was one of the things. It reminds me of like a Richard Linklater film.
Yes, absolutely. And I was just sitting there just watching it like, wow, it's so awkward, but so relatable. I get every moment of it. And the performances from Cooper and what's the name? Maggie's real name?
Dylan.
Okay, Dylan, yeah, Jaleel. Dylan from... not Schitt's Creek. What's that other show? Whatever show she's from, was so well done. And we'll get into the spoiler view part of it, but those performances and that chemistry together was so well done and so memorable. I'm not going to be surprised if both of them start getting more roles, or Cooper starts getting better projects, because this was a really great project. If he starts getting more firepower to do whatever he wants, like, this was a really good movie, and I really dug it. So, do you want to go into spoilers, or do you want to start talking more about still broader topics?
Yeah, I mean, broader wise, I think it does a really good job of taking things that are normal tropes in like college drama, comedy movies, you know, parties, sex, alcohol, drugs, a shitty roommate, a crush, things like that. It takes those normal tropes you see in just every, you know, teenage high school, high school college
coming
drama.
Of age movie. Yeah. Yes,
and does them really, really well, and then also gives us a very flawed but not completely uncool protagonist.
Yes,
a lot of times your protagonist in these type of films is either is already amazing, you know, good looking and you know, athlete
or really
something.
Smart kid out of nowhere who's just too quirky, right?
Or he's
too
a loser,
quirky, too weird,
or he's a loser, and then it makes it kind of unbelievable.
Yes,
the situation. Whereas this one, you're just like, if he could just get out of his own way, like he would be all
He'd
right.
Be
like
cool.
You
exactly.
could make friends. You could get a girlfriend.
Like one thing in particular, like how in the first 5 minutes of the movie, right? This is the only spoiler part I'm going to talk about in this version of the film. Like in the first 5 minutes of the movie, he's sitting there and is like talking to his stuffed animal and he's trying to talk to his roommate. And he's like, you should just talk to him. Just try to open up to him and see what he is. Tries to talk to him, and in his own way, he doesn't add to the conversation, or he doesn't help anything with the conversation. And the stuffed animal's like, well, you tried.
And then that's the thing too, is like, okay, your perspective is you have a shitty roommate, mm-hmm. but then also, like, are you trying?
Are you trying? Exactly. Yeah. And it didn't seem like he was trying at all, but it's that awkwardness of like, I'm reaching out.
Right. Get out of your comfort zone.
I'm trying to reach out, but I don't know how to reach out.
Exactly.
And then I just don't know how to navigate a conversation. So
then I just go back to what I'm comfortable doing.
Exactly.
And then I go call my mom.
And from then on, I was like, wow, this movie's about to hit some tropes that are the same but are so different. And I love that, because all the time, you know, and like you said, most of these teen movies or these college movies, you get this roommate that, you know, the protagonist is just trying.
And he's basically an obstacle.
Right.
That's it.
Right.
Doesn't add anything other than being an obstacle.
Just to be an obstacle. But whereas in this film, it's like, okay. Oh. Okay.
He has his own story.
Right. It's like he has a reason why he's like that, but you are not trying to help and add on to helping salute. It's like making this a better like solution for you, you know? And that kind of help plays a part in helping Alex grow up throughout the later in the film, which we won't get into just yet. But I really love the dynamic of how his relationships helped him, or lack of a better term, look himself in the mirror and be like, okay, this is what's going on. And I don't know about you, but the big moment, the big night before we get to the climax of the film.
Yeah, I mean, deep down, like as much as it's about Alex, yeah, you have this whole encounter with the girl who ends up being an RA.
And I was just going to say, and you have that moment and that whole night. I don't know if you had this before, but like you're just coming from a party and you're having one great ass night and not great ass night. You're just coming from a party and you literally go from this party to like having this awakening. I call it like this awakening where it's like a light, like a light bulb for you. Where like, wow, you know what? This could be cool. This could be awesome. This could be a great moment for me in college. And you get that in this moment, and I just really enjoyed seeing that, because I don't think a lot of movies even try to tackle stuff like that. Because for me, like, I had moments like that in college where like I'm coming home from a party and like a couple of my friends are like, hey, let's just go look out on the Capitol and let's just go like just chill and have conversations, and just having those moments were like moments that I will always cherish. And I really enjoyed the small little nurture moments of this film, and it really mm-hmm. was good.
All right. With that being said, I guess let's dive into spoilers.
Yes, because I feel like I'm going to start tiptoeing on something and I'm going to accidentally say something wrong. Speaking of his relationship with the RA, which is literally his RA, it's that awkward, funny, if that makes sense. So remember 2 years ago with A Star Is Born, right? You know how like Bradley Cooper and Lady Gaga were trying to navigate each other, and it was being awkward when they first kind of met each other for the first time. This is what this reminded me of. It was just like, okay, well, I wanted to just have sex with you, but then because you kind of made it awkward, now we're kind of spending this night together because, you know, I like you and I want to still have sex with you, but you seem cool to be around with, and let's see what happens from that night. And it turned out to be a really great ass night.
Yeah, and it turns out to be a good night. And I think their chemistry is really good. And I think that, you know, them kind of traversing the campus after they leave the party, they go back to her room and then don't have sex.
Yes.
But then because of that, they end up having something more, yeah, which is, you know, something more meaningful where they get to know one another, because even the beginning, he's asking, like, do you even know my name? Like, things like that. And she doesn't even
know his name. Yeah, exactly.
And it helps her a little bit too, but obviously not until later.
Mm-hmm.
Learn a little bit about herself as well. And I thought their relationship was great and very eye opening and, you know, sad at times. But
and I was just gonna say that one thing that really kind of, I feel like a lot of people in college or just in relationships in general, just not even relationships in college, tackle is just communication and mm-hmm. the lack thereof. And that's literally what happened in this film. We're going to get into, I'm going to go more detail in it a night later, but like Maggie and Alex has this amazing ass night. And then all of a sudden, you know, you have that awkward, like, should I say something? Should I try to engage mm-hmm. with them? And Alex tries to, and Maggie is just like,
she shuts it down.
Like, nah, this is not it. Because, I mean, for him, this was like that once in a lifetime moment. Like, this was like the spark that I needed to get into college. For her, this was just, I hate to say it, a typical night, right? And they don't communicate that. She doesn't explain that to him. And it kind of messes up in his head what's going on with how he feels and yep. all this other stuff. Until it all boils over when they go to a night, go to another party the night following, where she basically tells him, dude, like, I'm trying to do the exact same thing I did last night. Like, I'm just trying to have a good time. And it doesn't care that it's you. I just want to have a good time. And, Alex takes that a little bit to heart.
Yeah.
And gets emotional about
but,
it.
But, I mean, the thing is what she shows him during that night they have together.
Mm-hmm.
Like, where they go play softball with those people who end up he becomes friends with later.
Yep.
So, and initially he's like, no, why? Like, we're going to go bury the turtle. And she's like, no, we can do that after. Like, it just gets him to start opening up.
Right.
And that's what changes his whole mindset.
Because it seems like for a while, like, and this is another thing, like I said, I want to go deeper into that night. Because he starts talking about how he feels like in college, everybody is up their own ass. And
everybody's against him.
Right. Everybody's so like cynical and so against him. That's why he has to feel like he has to put on this hard shell and be who he is and talk to his stuffed animal and stuff like that. And Maggie kind of tells him that that's not really how it goes. Yes, you can be selfish, but college is about, is it stereotypical as it sounds? It's about finding yourself and learning to like be yourself here. And he kind of like took that within himself and started learning to be a better person and opening up with people. And I thought it was really cool to see that happen. But
and granted, it happens a little fast, that transition.
Yes.
But what I do like is initially the transition, he's not even necessarily doing it for the betterment of himself. He's doing it for her. But then it turns into, oh,
okay,
it does help him.
Right.
Because it starts with little things like opening up to the roommate and actually talking to him a little bit, like getting on the same level as him and then being like, oh, he's not so bad.
Right. And like that's how him after the night after he basically talks to his roommate about smoking weed and talks about, just opening up and talking to girls and trying to navigate his feelings about Maggie and finding out that, you know, Maggie doesn't really give a shit about him, no, per se. And
doing the thing I've seen guys do where he sends her like 8 messages that are read but not replied.
And it's like, and I'm sitting there, you know, watching this and I'm like, wow, I have been in that situation before. And it's just like, you got to know when to let go. And for most of us, especially in that specific time in our lives, we just didn't know how to let go. And, you know, I was, you know, cringing the entire time, but I'm just like, wow, I've been there. I've literally been there. And I loved, and I don't know if you had to deal with this too, but I loved the way, like, the second night, how they found a way to get inside the party. Like, they lied their ways in. Like, who do you know at this party? Oh, we know Jay. How you know Jay? Oh, Jay's on the basketball team. You know, he's called, cool, dark. Like, yeah, we know Jay. We've been around him. And that's how they got into the party. And I was like, wow. We have all done this before. And that's sad. But not sad, but it's just funny and ironic that we have all lot of way in. But anyways, besides the point, inside of going to nostalgia moment, it was really well done to see how, like, one night literally just having a full conversation with your roommate could change to, like, hey, let's go to this party together. Let's get shit-faced together. Let's try to bond a little bit, and which kind of helps him in the end, because if I remember correctly, I'm jumping to the end just a little quick. He becomes friends with him, right? He was in that last shot with him, like, hanging out with him before he goes sees Maggie at mm-hmm. the play, right? That's what I figured. Okay.
So, yeah, they go to that party, and he ends up running into one of the chicks that they played softball with.
Yep.
And then they start hanging out, and they start dancing together, and then he sees her, and she sees him, and he thinks it's something, and she's like, I'm just having a good time. And, you know, he gets in his feelings, and unfortunately, you know, it takes him getting his feelings hurt for him to, like, wake up. We're like, she has that conversation with him, like, dude.
Like, no, this is not what I wanted. I just wanted to have sex, and they move on. And yes, last night was cool, but I'm not looking for anything more than what was last night. Like, last night was last night, and that's it. And he's like, well, I did all that for you. It's like, you're stupid. You shouldn't have done that for me. And, like, they get in a really heartfelt argument in the middle of the party.
And then you don't realize till later that he basically got her to start looking within herself as well as, like, what am I doing?
Right. And I love that the little tidbit that they gave us right at the end of that conversation where, like, and I call it this all the time. We all had that big cry in freshman year of college, or that big wake up moment in freshman year of college, or college in general, where it's like, I need to figure shit out. And he called his mom and his sister and called him,
like, I'm not going to call y'all as often.
I got to figure this shit out. I can't come home as much as I want to. I have to stay here and figure life out. And I have to slowly, not cut you off, but I have to slowly start taking reins and being me. And I have to do that to help myself get better. And it took him to get to that point to realize, like, yeah, I got to get out of this shell that I've been in for years since my dad's passed away. And it was such, like, a wow. Like, we all been there. Like, we all have had that one moment where we're just like, yeah, I got to figure shit out. And Maggie, besides, he's a freshman and Maggie's a sophomore RA. She kind of has a recollection on herself because, I mean, kind of not really her relationships or the reason why she only wants to do one night stands per se is because she kind of doesn't want to be attached to anybody.
Right. She's so focused on, like, school.
School, yes.
And doesn't want to have an attachment because she thinks it'll get in the way.
Mm-hmm.
And even though her friends say otherwise. Yes. And then it kind of takes, you know, Alex growing up a little bit and, like, starting to make friends with those other people, like,
for her to get where she's going, they have that little scene
at the diner or cafe where the guy who sees him, like, I guess every day is normally like, oh, you're like, he knows him by name. He's like, you taking this to go? And he's like, no,
I'm gonna do it for here.
Yeah.
And he finally learns how to be with them and he begins to be their friends and stuff like that.
And for him.
Yeah. And you start to realize, like, Alex is becoming one of his own now. And it takes just that simple conversation, that simple, like, you know what, let me go hang out with these people and see what they're about for Alex to become who he becomes later in the film, which we only get, like, what, 10 minutes after the climax? 10 minutes of, like, Alex having, like, 5 o'clock shave. He's, like, in his own, I don't remember what his major was, but he's doing stuff and he's basically hanging out with, I keep forgetting his roommate's name. He's a software engineer or something like that. His roommate was. And he was going to go do the summer with him. Maggie's like, I'd rather you stay here and be, like, my boyfriend during that time. And, like, I feel like the best growth that you could have ever asked for was, like, hey, I mean, we can. I just need you. I just need to know that I have somebody who's watching my back. Right. I need to know that somebody's watching my back. I don't have to constantly overlook you. You don't have to constantly check on me or anything like that. But I just need to know that
we're in this together.
Exactly. And literally in that moment, you could tell Maggie kind of just clicked and understood exactly where that was coming from. Was like, yes, I'm okay with that. And I'm finally, I'm ready to open myself to that. And it was such a aha moment that I didn't think I really wanted in a film, but it was just like, wow. Like, he got his resolution and she finally got her resolution to understanding, like, hey, it's not bad to have school and a relationship at the same time. Like, I really enjoyed that sentiment at the end.
Yeah,
of the film.
It really, you really get a sense of balance, because mm-hmm. even that next day, he's so focused on trying to get this girl
mm-hmm.
and do everything for her that he's not paying attention to the big picture. It's not until he starts doing some of the other things. It's like, okay, now she sees you for what you can be.
Yep.
Because it's all about that balance. And he finally learned that, because I think had that, like, that very next day, she would have like accepted him or whatever.
Yeah.
Like, their relationship would have been bad, because he would have been like a puppy dog, just following her around all the time.
2-3 months tops.
Texting all the time.
Exactly.
Whereas, like, now he's like, look, we don't need to be together all the time. We don't need to talk all the time. But, like, I just need to know that we're in this together. We're partners, all that sort of thing. Because they basically, he came from a place where he's like really got attachments. And she was in a place where, like, she didn't want any attachments. And they both trying to find that balance in the middle. Yeah.
And it took them, if I remember the time jump, because what I appreciated about this film, too, is, like, it did a time jump 2.5 years where we got to this point. And it was like, okay, they've grown up a little bit, but the little 10 minutes that we got with them in that 2.5 year time jump was enough for me to understand, like, wow, they both grew in a different part of their lives to where they're at this point that they are right now. And it was, I really enjoyed it.
Yeah, I really, really dug this one.
I gave it a 4 out of 5. What did you give it?
I also gave it 4 out of 5.
Okay, now let me ask this, and I feel like I'm kind of nitpicking at this point. I have it at 7. No, I don't have it that low. I do not have it that low. I have it at 5 right now in terms of list. I have it at number 5. Where would you put Shithouse at this point?
So I would have this at 7.
Okay, so we're right beside each other. Okay. And I, like, this film was really good. I really enjoyed it. I wouldn't say it's the best film of this year, but it's a really good, heartwarming reality check that I feel like teenage and coming of age, like, college films need it. And I really enjoyed it. I wish more films would do this more often. Really enjoyed it. Cooper did a phenomenal directorial debut job. I can't wait to see more projects that he does.
Absolutely. I really dug this. It's about an hour and 40 minutes.
Yeah, hour and 40.
And there's not really any, like, drag time. Like,
no.
It just goes, and I thought the time jump was appropriate. And, yeah, it's just really endearing story. Performances are pretty good from everyone all around. And, yeah, good debut.
I really, like I said, really dug it. Cooper, I can't wait to see what most he has done left. All right. Is there anything else that you wanted to add before we head out?
No, that's it. Where can kids find you?
Okay, yeah, the kids can find me on Instagram and Twitter at King Julian Owens. And where can the kids find you, Johnny?
You can find me on Instagram and Twitter at Johnny the Wonder, and on Letterboxd, Johnny Boy Wonder, for reviews and lists.
All right, guys, that's going to be our time today. 2 weeks from now, I think we got an interesting movie we're going to do. So I can't wait for it. I believe Johnny can't wait for it. So until then, guys, we'll see you guys next time.
Later.